Welcome to yet another exciting season of Sisters in Conversation, the podcast. I'm your host, Tebelo Motsane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On this podcast, I profile women of color in the legal profession in an attempt to celebrate their contribution to the profession. We journey through their individual stories of perseverance and resilience and overcoming challenges like imposter syndrome, racism, and sexism, to name a few. I hope you're geared up for what promises to be another insightful, informative, and empowering season. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to this podcast. Welcome to another episode of Sisters in Conversation. I'm your host, Tebelo Motsane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On today's episode, I am joined by Thokozile Zambane. Yo, I'm so excited. Thokozile is a seasoned infrastructure development professional with over 12 years experience having worked for multinational companies like Norton Rose Fulbright, Citibank, and EON Energy, and is currently the CEO of Bayaka Infrastructure Partners, a South African infrastructure manager. She is passionate about skills development and regularly facilitates training for development finance institutions with the Association of African Development Finance Institutions and conducts masterclasses for SMMEs as part of corporate enterprise and supplier development programs. Thokozile has served on various public and private sector committees, including the South African Local Government Youth Development Forum, Energy Working Committee, the BRICS Women Business Alliance Energy Security Subcommittee, the Climate Council's Working Group for Women's Access to Energy Finance Working, and she chairs Chaba Winds of Change Community Trust. Thokozile's work in socio-economic development includes founding Read Power, a social investment initiative that donates solar lights to enable children to read and do their homework at night. She's a Mandela Washington Fellow and an alumni of Power Africa / YALI Women in African Power Program. Welcome to the show, Thokozile. Yo, Ible, I'm out of breath. Yo, today is actually a little bit of a loud one, guys. Sorry, guys. I'm in the middle of Aktiriko Kaiba Bizika construction. So today's episode is going to be a bit loud. You're going to be hearing tractors and whatever mess in the background. But I promise you, Thokozile is a sensational guest. Welcome to the show, Thokozile.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the invite.
Yo. I mean, finally, I know you had reservations about why I'm only calling you now.
I mean, really?
Like, excuse me. I always save the best for these later episodes in the season, okay? Thokozile, please, let's have a conversation. Let's start at the very beginning. Who is Thokozile? Tell us a little bit about your upbringing. Where were you born and raised? Which primary school did you attend? High school? How many siblings? Just tell us a little bit about yourself personally.
Sure. So yes, Thokozile, full name Thokozile Dingokuhle Nombulelo Zambane, ere ke go fa ya pase. Everyone wanted to name me. I feel like, you know, it was like when the legend arrives. I'm the last of three girls. I do strongly suspect that my parents had thought, you know, third time's a charm and they'd get a boy. Mm-hmm. But then I think they got better than that. So I'm originally from Pretoria, born and raised in Pretoria. Originally from my family's, we were originally based on Mamlodi, Kosifo, and then moved to Silverton and then eventually to Fairy Glen. Primary school, high school, some of us are old. These are five things, but yes, primary school. Yeah. I went to St. Paula's Primary, where I literally from preschool all the way to standard five. I just say standard five, right?
Yeah, you're very old. I was about to say, oh, you're not about to start the age. Sub A, sub B.
And then did my high school at CBC, Christian Brothers College in Pretoria. And then eventually went on to study my BCom Law and my LLB at the University of Pretoria. Raised, born and bred in Pretoria, last of three siblings, absolutely, you know, blessed and fortunate to have been raised by an amazing, amazing woman, my mother. She unfortunately passed away last year, so that's been a bit of a challenge and a bit of an adjustment. Especially given that she's really just been that grounding force in my life. I still even remember when I was at Tux and started studying, and hey, you know, the things that happened during varsity. And some of us would even hide the marks, but and I remember like just saying to my mom, look, just be patient with me, give me 5 years, at the end of 5 years I'll give you 2 degrees. And I kept to my word, went on to do King. I did my articles, I served my articles, I moved to Joburg for when it was time to work. And I think that decision was really largely driven by the fact that a lot of the big firms were based there, Gauteng, the city of gold. And so that's how I ended up professionally joining. I did my articles at Worksman's Attorneys. I was an associate there as well. I did my articles rotation in litigation, a rotation in banking and finance. And that's really how I started falling in love with finance as a space. And I actually remember when I was applying for university, I'd applied, you know, my sister, so my older sister, the firstborn is also an attorney. And so I was actually really blessed and fortunate to really have had that guidance in making the decision. I still say that I didn't choose law because she had. I feel like for as long as I can remember, I've always wanted to be a lawyer. I think I still have memories of me being six and somebody asking me, what do you want to be? And I'm like, I want to be a lawyer. And I think in hindsight, probably largely driven by the shows, double LA Law, things like that. And I remember when my sister advised
me, you know, these kids, they don't know those other ones. They
I just, am assuming. So the equivalent of now's generation would be your suits. And I remember my sister saying, don't just do an LLB, do a BCom Law or do a, you know, so that you've got a more rounded experience and broader grounding in terms of your studying. And I remember then, so I was like, oh yeah, sure, become okay. And I remember when I was doing my applications, I then had applied and I put, you know, first option BCom Law, second option BA Law, you know. And I remember Rao, which is UJ now, I'd gotten an acceptance then. They'd accepted me for BA Law. And I remember telling my sister, oh, they've accepted me. My sister was like, no, wait for the BCom. She was like, no, wait for the BCom. You know, there's always, and I think that's always been the challenge, you know, from a legal profession thing, and especially with people of, you know, of our demographic, that we've kind of been confined to certain areas of law. And she'd always said, have a broader view, look at the economy, look at the commerce side of things, look at the finance side of things, because at the end of the day, that is what's moving things around, you know. And I was then fortunate to have been accepted by Tux for my BCom Law. So I got to do my BCom Law, and then after that did my LLB. Had a very interesting university career. I think I've always been an all-rounder. Even though some of my marks were looking tricky at times because of fun times, the impact of that was really because I got very involved, and I think for me, which is probably what then helped me when I was then applying for articles, you know, so I may not have had, you know, I may not have been that A student, you know, graduated, I did manage to, you know, get a B, but what helped me was that I was able to demonstrate something more than just the qualification. So by the time I was done, you know, I'd been fortunate enough. So I'd been in leadership positions. I'd been in the House committee from very early, actually, for of the residences. I think I was one of the youngest House committee members, having been selected in my second year. Well, at the end of my first year, actually, served in my second year, went on to join TuxRag, climbed the ranks and within the organization, from committee to executive committee member to eventually becoming the vice chairperson. And then I also spent some time in the SRC. So I was an SRC member then in my final year. So I think that those experiences, by the time then I was facing future employers, it could really be seen that, okay, no, but this is a dynamic person. And I think it also helped when, because it's one thing to, you know, be academically strong, but the reality is, you know, we do articles, and articles is a fixed contract. You've got a job for that 2-year period. After that, you know, there's a selection. And I remember when I started my articles, feeling a bit imposter, like, you know, I was in the Santon law firm and now faced with the cream of the crop from all of these universities and people coming with these distinctions, body 100% A's, what, you know.
Dean's list.
And I remember thinking, yo, Mudim Koreano, but okay, at least it was in medical for 2 years. You know, I've got 2 years. We'll see what happens after these 2 years. So, and funny enough, at the end of the 2-year period, I was retained. And some of the people that hadn't necessarily, you know, had those dean's lists hadn't been retained. And I always thought it was so interesting. And weirdly enough, but when I was, you know, by the time I was done with articles, you know, we were going through the global financial crisis, the 2008-2009 global financial crisis. So was not the ideal time to want to be a finance lawyer. And I remember being offered the firm saying to me, look, you can see what's happening globally. You can see what's happening in the market. We understand that your first preference obviously is to, you know, to be in the banking and finance team. Unfortunately, we just don't have the amount of work that would be required, but we want you to stay. We want you in the firm. So would you be open to being an associate in the litigation team? Which was for me like, okay, you know, at least, you know, a job in hand is better than
a job.
A job. And I was then able to say, and, you know, and they said to me, look, after a year, you know, or as the market changes, you know, we can then
consider
moving you to the commercial team. And I spent a year as a litigation associate, and I knew in that year that the court was not for me. I hated the experience, to be quite honest. And I think it has its people. And I think fundamentally my entire career and the journey and the detours have taken have really just been, you know, be true to yourself. What works for somebody, you know, you can see Bodali Mpofu, and you're like, yeah, that looks so great. But is it you when you are?
We don't have the same templates.
We don't have the same templates. So.
And I wanted to say that, you know, a lot of the time we think that it's so important to know exactly what you want, but also knowing what you don't want can get you to the same results, you know? So we always focus on, this is what I want, this is what I want. But we sort of want these other things without first actually having explored other things, right? So imagine if you had just been hell-bent on, I want to go into finance, to a point where you're just like, actually, I'm not going to accept this offer because I just want to go into finance. I'm going to go look for a finance job in another space. And then things there, it's such a toxic environment that you only last for 3 months, for example, right? Stayed the course, you were open to learning or being outside of your comfort zone. For, I mean, it was a year that you were being promised. You were open outside of your comfort zone. But in that, you knew for sure that, okay, I'm not missing out on anything on the litigation. If it was someone else, they probably would have been like, damn, why did I want finance? I'm having fun here. You know,
and that's the thing.
So one of the things that I want to push is also just being open to things that appear to be outside of your comfort zone in the beginning.
150-200%. And I think also what we must remember is when you are choosing what to study, in essence, it is a 17-year-old deciding. This is what I want to study. You know, so sometimes when you stop and you're like, yes, I let a 17-year-old decide my life. And I think also, you know, and I think what becomes
so silly now.
Yes, but it becomes so important is then you can't be closed off. You've got to be open to where life will take you. One of my favorite quotes is a Steve Jobs quote. I think he speaks about the fact that, you know, life is a series of dots and they may not make sense, but only when you look back and you connect them, do you see that connection, right? Mm-hmm. So I was actually recently, so as part of my facilitation work, I do technical like legal masterclasses and infrastructure development masterclasses, but I also do some soft skill training. And I recently did a graduate training for like final year students. I think it was second to final year students. And it was really around design thinking and career development. Because with this dynamic world that we're living in, you've got to be able to be agile. You've got to be able to be adaptable to the circumstances. And more than anything, you've got to recognize that currently there are jobs that in 5 years' time won't exist. And currently there are jobs that don't exist now, but in 5 years' time will. And so you can't really confine yourself. And I've really just been, you know, one of the people, one of those that I will try it all because fundamentally it would make sense. So right now I'm not a practicing attorney. I'm not in-house counsel. I'm running an infrastructure fund, but everything in my journey has added to that. So even, you know, that year of litigation where I was initially disappointed, being a litigator makes me a better commercial lawyer. Because I know right? So I know when a dispute and we're looking at a contract, I know when I draft, and that's why I can trust my drafting, because there's no ambiguity
from the side of a litigator.
So that's just a thing to note there.
Sure. Thank you so much for that. Some gems. Thank you so much for that, Thokozile. I think before we move forward, I also just want to touch on something you said earlier, where a lot of the time I have youngsters who are battling with this concept of failure or concept of rejection or not doing well. And you touched on, you know, there were marks of yours which used to be questionable, and then you'd recall that it's from too much partying in one season. How did you manage to just, you know, find discipline, bring yourself back from that mess? Like, if you just have one or two words of encouragement from someone who's noticing now, yo, I just wrote my June exams, but I know if I was not so busy just before June, I would have been able to get better results. Or if somebody's, you know, like, okay, I messed up in June, my marks are really just under, how do I pull myself back up for the upcoming year-end exams?
I think, you know, fundamentally, you've got to realize, and that realization has to hit you at some point, that it is my life, you know. So when you, before you get to university, you've got your parents kind of like pushing you, baiting you, spoon feeding, all of that. But I think, you know, especially when you're in university, you've got to, one, recognize it. Yes, in as much as your parents want you to study further, it's not for them. You know, so the consequences of you not completing and of you not positioning yourself for the best job are the consequences you will have to carry in life. And in fact, if you, and I think also, you know, coming, especially, you know, like with some of us in our backgrounds, you cannot put, you can't then go back and be a burden to your family. You know, when your family has been able to take you to university, and you know, in my case, you know, my mother was a matron, she was a nurse. So not, you know, the most financially savvy, you know, woman that I've ever met, human being actually, but the funds weren't there. NEFSA's had to pay for me. So if I don't finish this thing, how am I going to pay these people back? But more so, if I don't finish this thing and get the job that I need to get, how am I going to go back and be able to pull back into my family? Because at the end of the day, you know, we're raised as a collective. So if I don't move and get to the other side, I'm blocking it for the kids that are then coming. I'm then not able to help. And I think for me, the biggest, you know, one of my biggest fears is being a burden. And I'm one of those, you know, like in this season, this time, you know, people will be talking about indota must, indota give me money. What? I've never been able to ask for money. I find it very uncomfortable. I want to be able to pay my way. I want to be able to, if I want this, I want this.
I want you to see me struggling and then only be like, okay, let me help you.
Let me help you. But, you know, because and those are the things I think for me, and maybe because I do tend to catastrophize. So, you know, when I was in that position, I was like, yo, you failed. I was like, yo, my goodness, you're going to be on the streets. You're not going to be okay. And for me, it was the worst case scenario of I don't want to be in a position where I'm going to be dependent on somebody. And if I don't pull up my socks, I will put myself in a position where I'm going to have to make decisions or put myself in positions where I have to be dependent on somebody. And where you are dependent on somebody, they control you, right? They have the ability to say to you, you do this, you don't do this. And for me, that was it. I wanted autonomy. And I feel like autonomy and you know, and being able to fully self-actualize requires you to have that discipline to, you know, to do the things that are uncomfortable. Because the reality is the lessons and being able to persevere through your university, you know, it doesn't get as bad as you know, it gets worse, right? Studying and passing crim law, you think is the hardest thing right now, your family law, whatever. But the hardest thing is going to come where you have deliverables in a job one day. And maybe the consequence of failing crim law is, okay, you're going to do a sub. Maybe you'll even plan a siknyana so that you can do this. Calculate, no, I just need 45%. You know, you also don't want to get into that mindset of just, let me just pass, you know, because then you can easily become that employee who's like, let me just do this. And the reality is when you're now an employee, the just do
minimum,
this.
Yeah, the bare minimum.
You're not going to get a bonus. You're not going to get the full extent of the financial rewards and the satisfaction also and a conducive work environment. So long story short, I think, you know, yes, failure happens. I mean, even after university, I mean, I spent the past 8 years as an entrepreneur. So I know failure in different ways as well there, but it's what you do with it. Do you sit in the failure and wallow and woe is me? Or do you get up? Because no one is going to come and save you.
Sure. Sorry, I'm writing this down because no one is coming to save you. Yo, thank you so much, Tokozile. It's so important. I also think it's very important that we do keep highlighting, like a lot of the time, I'm just trying to also just get youngsters out of this imposter syndrome that's created by spending too much time on the internet, right? So you'll be scrolling through Instagram and you'll be thinking, okay, all attorneys drive luxury cars, they you know, they shop luxury brands, and they don't have any failures. And this is just a reminder that a lot happened before people can afford the things that they have. There was a lot of failure along the way, but like you said, it's exactly what you do with that. You don't have the same, like popular formula. They're not necessarily going to turn out in a specific way for you, you know? It's just important to appreciate that failure in a weird way is part of the process.
It's a building stone, because also if you've never failed, you never push yourself.
And right? I always say you didn't fail, you learned.
Yes. Yeah, like I think
anything you try to avoid getting into that again. So you didn't fail, you learned.
I really feel like in every situation, you know, it's either a win or it's a lesson. So, I mean, like you say, and, you know, yes, the perception of lawyers and yes, you can do well. And I think, you know, while in practice and my legal career, I mean, I was very fortunate, you know, I worked for, you know, from Worksmans, I then went on to, it was Danae's Rates at the time, which later became Norton Rose Fulbright. So got to get global exposure with that, had an opportunity to, you know, go work in London for a year with Citibank and had all of these, that great experience, worked for a German utility, spent time in Germany. But the reality is, at the end of the day, you can, and that's something, that's the point I want to make is, we want the life, we want the highlight, we want the Instagram, we want the picture perfect thing. And sometimes, you know, you can chase things and chase the tick box. I think for the longest time I was like, I want to be a partner in a law firm. And then I had to stop and be like, what is the state of my mental health right now?
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth it? What is the state of my relationships? Who am I showing up as in the world? What is it doing to me? So we also need to be able to keep ourselves in check. Like, it's good to want things, but, you know, so I think I saw a quote, something that says, be sure you are as happy about your life as you seem to be posting on Instagram. Because the saddest thing is, you know, you've seen it where people posting or they taking a picture and it's only in that moment they're laughing, only in that split second, and then after they've posted you're almost going back to this sad negative place. So be sure that whatever it is, enjoy your real life and don't be focused on what it looks like to somebody else. Because I think we're also so concerned about batobatlareng, you know, I mean, my biggest thing is when I went into entrepreneurship, you know, and I mean, funny enough, I got into entrepreneurship because I was working for this amazing multinational. And this was at the point when I decided that I no longer wanted to be in practice because it just I was actually saying to somebody earlier, it has its people, and it's okay if you're not the person for it. Find your path, you know. And for me, in practice, in as much as I mean, I'm a great lawyer. I won't. I think for me, I'm only saying that now. Funny enough, with the realization in the last week, because I've spent so many years feeling like an imposter in all of those spaces, being worried that someone's gonna find me out, what. Yeah. And eventually, like, I realized recently, I'm like, if I've been able to pull this off, I can't be that bad.
Like, when I can't think, how long is your lie gonna last for?
How long is, because that's the thing, like, okay, so if, let's say, me as this imposter is able to have done this,
ABC,
this.
ABC, sure.
Aye, but then there must be, there really must be something there, right? There must be something to it. So for me, I think, you know, one on the perception and wanting a certain life, I think it's very important to be authentic and true to yourself. I think in whatever career goal and however you want to map out your career, I think it's very important to take the time to understand you know, and understand your values, your goals, your vision, you know, and it not be tied to material tick boxes. Cause I feel like true joy and true fulfillment in life is very often in things that can't be measured. Sure.
I love that. Yo, thank you so much, Tokozile. You said something which actually just wraps up or sums up the purpose of this podcast. When I started this podcast, I was like, I need to create a place where we celebrate Black women in the legal profession, because it's just so difficult for women in general to celebrate their achievements. A lot of the time we have to sort of dumb things down. We're not allowed to, be confident in the things that we've achieved, because then it comes across as arrogance. We're not really always given the platform to blow our own horn. And you just said, I'm a great attorney, and I can't believe it's taken me this long to figure that out. So thank you. Thank you for saying that loud. It's important.
Because I think sometimes, you know, you've got to celebrate the little wins, or you've got to actually sometimes, you know, take a step out and look at yourself. And I think, you know, why I'm even feeling like, actually, no, I'm not such a bad lawyer. I think I'm good, because I think I was up to like Hoppus One, like reviewing. And so in as much as I'm not practicing or in-house, my role, I manage the legal matters as well for the fund. So for a transaction that we're working on, I was busy reviewing a subscription agreement, and I was up till late. But my comments, I was like, wait a minute, is this from you? You know, but also what was also very interesting was my comments and how I show up is so informed by every single thing. And even the seasons that I thought were failures, like I'd spoken about the litigation year, how that has morphed that. But entrepreneurship, more than anything, you know, even in its challenges, you know, businesses that have failed, projects that didn't go off, attempting to buy here or do, you know, I mean, I once tried to buy into a manufacturing facility and started understanding the numbers and the commercials behind things, which prepared me for when I eventually did end up buying equity in a facility. And one of the things that also, what I also realized recently is that everything and every table and every opportunity that I've been able to sit on and been invited to has been because I'm a lawyer, right? Sure. And has been because I bring that skill. So I do have value. There's something that when I'm sitting at the table that nobody else can bring. And maybe sometimes we need to move ourselves into spaces where you can feel and see your uniqueness so that you can better appreciate yourself. You know, there's the story of Coco Chanel, who, you know, in Paris, a French lady, but when she gets to America, hey, Coco Chanel, it becomes something, oh, unique, Nyana. There's, you know, there she's able to fully be seen as this unique thing, and now she's special.
Sure. Yeah, like I said, you've summed up summed up what this podcast is about. I do have value, and I bring something unique to the table. My contribution matters, basically.
Sure.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. You know, in our conversation, you've spoken about finance. You've spoken about you know, construction. And also just from reading your bio, there was some stuff on like energy. A lot of the, you also just then mentioned that a lot of the time we go into law only being aware of it's either you're a practicing attorney or you are an advocate. You know, we don't really branch out into all these other amazing areas of the practice of law. So, you know, just in a few words, can you please just, you know, somebody who is wondering what is even all of this, what's going on, keying energy law or keying construct, like in a nutshell, what does your day-to-day job look like?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, I got into energy because, you know, the South African Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Program, I was fortunate enough to be involved in the program from inception when I was still in practice. And so as a and I specialized as a project finance lawyer, so really involved in the structuring of these energy deals. You know, it's a very complex contracting, and that's the thing, you know. So for example, energy, a lot of people, and I hear it, and yes, true, you know, there's a big drive that energy equals STEM, right? And I feel like it creates a very exclusionary, you know, narrative around the sector, because the sector is for me probably one of the juiciest ever, because there's so many nuances in it. It's not just the engineer in the room. It's not. It is the finance guys, because yes, it is a power plant at the end of the day. And yes, there are the technicalities, the mechanics, but it needed to be funded. But in order for it to be funded, you needed a lawyer. You know, you'll actually find that in energy and especially large scale infrastructure projects and triple P's, your private part, your public private partnerships, the legal leg and the legal lifting on those projects are key, right? So for me, that was my entry into the sector, is because we were the lawyers who, you know, you're doing the due diligence, you are then drafting it, you're driving the transaction to close. When I left practice, you know, it was that knowledge that enabled me to try develop some energy projects myself, because I'd had this overview of what the sector is. So I think what, in a nutshell, and I think whether it's energy, whether it's tech, whatever there is, there is a document somewhere. There is guaranteed going to be an agreement of some sort. Guaranteed there is some kind of policy of some sort. Guaranteed there's some kind of regulation of some sort. So whatever space it is, as an attorney, you can get in. You know, I spent the morning with an amazing fintech and technology lawyer. You know, and you know, we're talking about things like crypto. So somebody's thinking crypto and they're thinking finance, but noma kanjani, guys, as lawyers, you can't cut us out. People will say, hey, you lawyers, ish, you mess things up, or you're always there. But the problem is you can't move. You actually can't do anything without the legals. And I think people need to broaden their minds. So you almost need to just think of yourself, where would I want to be? Even if you're thinking about a beauty brand. I mean, I did a facilitation for Fenty on Monday, but there's legals in there. So if you're interested in fashion, or you're interested in that, there's going to be a legal. So I think people must not limit themselves to practice or just being in an advocate. And you know, if that's your route, it is, go and flourish. But I think very often, by confining and restricting it in this way, if you find yourself in those spaces and you don't fully feel embraced in it, you may feel like, what now? You know, but think broader. So you're practicing, or if you're not in practice, your in-house counsel, meaning, you know, in-house counsel is people that are working in companies. For as many companies as exist and operate in the market, that's how many opportunities exist for you as a legal graduate.
Sure. Hey, Bo, we must have you on this podcast more often. But that is so important. Thank you so much, Togazile. I really get so many emails where everyone's like, hi, Alstabella, you know, I'm really stuck as to what next, you know, it's oversaturated there by law. And I'm just like, it's not. We are just really, it's because you go into it thinking, okay, criminal law, okay, family law, okay, you know, even when they say commercial law, it's like a lot of people are not understanding just how vast the scope is. Mm. Like you said, in beauty, there's an attorney who must facilitate these contracts. In tech, in energy, everywhere, basically, like you've just said, there's guys, opportunities facilitating this process. So the opportunities are endless. I think the most important thing, though, as well, what I always encourage people to do is, firstly, start off at the podcast. There are so many attorneys I've already featured who are in different fields. So once you've then said, oh, okay, I listened to Togozile's episode and she was speaking on energy, reach out to Togozile, say, I listened to you on the podcast. I'd like to find out more about your role, you know? And that person can basically just learn even more than what you've given us today on this episode. So thank you for that.
No, and I regularly, I mean, I'm always happy to speak to, like, I mean, and one of the saddest things, I actually put an all out call on a WhatsApp group with some lawyers that I know, is there's an increasing number of unemployed law graduates. And it's actually quite a serious problem that we have right now, right? And the challenge is, where do they, like, there's no spaces or places for them to go. And I think a lot of them end up feeling stuck. You know, and I think also, so one, I think what graduates or students, especially like if you're a student and you are in your second year, you need to be applying for VAC work. You need to be already thinking about articles, you know, because, you know, I think a lot of times we leave it till I'm in my final year and then I'm going to apply for a job. It doesn't work like that. So you've kind of got to be a bit proactive from the get-go, as early as possible. And secondly, you need to then be reaching out and trying to find opportunities to start doing something. Do something until, like, while you wait for the job or while you're trying to understand it, go research, read some articles, write some articles, you know. I think we're also in a space where everything is so new, you know, like, if we go back and think about the Companies Act, for example, it was previously the 1973 Act, which we all learned and, you know, grew up with, and then 2008, a new act comes in. What many people don't understand is that that became such a game changer within law firms and practice, because we were all, in as much as the principles of the 73 Act were being carried across, we were all looking at a new act. And if you took the time to dig into it, understand those provisions, you could easily demonstrate expertise that exceeded those of seniors, seasoned people. So with the law constantly changing, with the world constantly changing, go and find out when they speak about crypto, or even when you think about something as, you know, a podcast, for example, or you're looking at web designing an app. Funny enough, I've actually designed I'm part of a team that's developed a digital enterprise management system for SMMEs. But the point is, even in those, there's policy documents, privacy documents. So while you wait for the opportunity, you know, while you're waiting for your name to be called, go and read these things. Go and read and understand, okay, I'm on Instagram. What are their policy things saying? Because then you can actually see how the law continues to apply. Or more Facebook, some of all of those terms and conditions. How is it actually written? How is it set up? You know, it's little nuance, little things like that, that I think it becomes very important to continually be trying to get knowledge. Because as a basis, I think when you're starting your career or still a student, fact, you know nothing. But that's okay. Mm-hmm. And it's also the best time in your life to know nothing and be able to admit it openly.
Yeah.
So go and learn, reach out to people, ask them, how is this? How does this work? You're allowed, you know, there's no such thing as a stupid question when you're trying to grow yourself.
Mm. Sure. Thank you so much for that, Tokozile. So just two comments, really. I feel like I'm being dragged, yes, because you're already on Instagram, right? And then there was this new app that got launched last week, Threads, part of Instagram, right? Now there's this clause that has been doing the rounds that in order for you to delete your Threads profile, you also have to then delete the main, your main Instagram account. So the video that's been doing the round is, yeah, you guys don't read the terms and conditions. And I was, so as you're saying it now, you're like, yeah, you're already on Facebook and you're already on Instagram, so you better go read those T's and C's. I'm like, I just clicked accept. But there's so much truth to what you're saying. And another comment, this is just so funny. Just earlier this week, I was talking to Tarabo about business rescue, right? And then he randomly then said something about, oh yes, I don't remember how we got to back in the day. And he's like, yeah. And then it was judicial management. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Yeah. That really just has highlighted again, the age gap between us, because when I was in school, I was not doing judicial management. In fact, I recall that in past papers, we used to see stuff on judicial management, and all the time the lecturers were like, okay, that's not important, that's the old act, and we were just learning business rescue. And so when you're speaking about this, I'm like, actually, when I was already in varsity, we were not even referring to the 1973 act.
Which means that already from the crux, you're beating people that are already in practice. It's about the perspective. Exactly. I think a lot of the times, whatever is happening in life, what is your perspective of it? Mm-hmm. You can look at something as a challenge, as a problem, or you can look at it as an opportunity. And I take everything as an opportunity, because life can be hard, adulting can adult, but we are going to sit in the woe is me, okay, and then what? Are you going to get up? Are you going to innovate? Are you going to see the opportunity and say, actually, there's something new here. There's whatever. Mm. Even the straight thing you're speaking about, I think, you know, it's an excellent opportunity for somebody to write a legal opinion around this. And it doesn't have to be somebody within practice. Because as a law student, you probably have better access to legislation, to your journals, to all of that, than people that are in practice. Because funny enough, people that are in practice aren't often going back to the sources of law, right? So as a young person, it's topical, it's interesting. Why Osangwale something?
Sure. You know what? You have just reminded me of something that I always say to youngsters. In fact, just looking at the sister-in-law website now, I'm sure the last person who wrote an article is somebody who's actually very close to admission now. But Samke, she was in a season of unemployment, and she was just like, if you can just let me write articles for sister-in-law. And those articles gave her so much exposure. She was even featured on radio stations in KZN, because that's where she was based. She was featured in radio stations where literally she could then translate those articles to a isiZulu platform. And how is that for reach? How is that for reaching the communities who don't understand English, who don't have resources to browse through the sister-in-law website, but they are definitely listening to radio. They are definitely... they are definitely spending 3 rand, 5 rand on the local newspaper, to which two of the articles she also translated to Zulu. So she didn't just wait in her season. She was actually doing something. She was researching the latest developments at the time. She was writing on, can you get evicted during lockdown? What are the laws around eviction, and what's happening during this lockdown? She was being proactive, and she was taking the direction of her career into her own hands. By the time she was getting interviewed, she was like, no, these are the articles that I was writing for sister-in-law. I got invited to various radio stations in KZN, and I translated the articles into isiZulu. You then have something to talk about. You're not just the person who was like, yo, I'm unemployed, I'm just going to browse Instagram the whole day.
Yes, and I'm a brand, because I also think it's never too early to start developing a professional brand. Right. And I think
the thing about the internet is these things stay there now. So her articles are gonna be on my page forever. And I even told them, like, no, you must use the link and put it on your LinkedIn as well. So these things are how you start building a brand. What you're doing with your LinkedIn in your time of unemployment is important.
Yeah, and I'm very happy that you're actually mentioning LinkedIn, because I feel like, you know, we need to see, you know, as a young person, people should be getting in there to engage, you know, not there, you know, and you know, not don't be afraid to see the people that, you know, firstly, like, identify, okay, I'm interested in the following sectors, right? Companies that are in the following sectors. Start following the companies in those sectors. Go then and find the people within those companies that you start following. Look for your graduate recruitment people, look for your HR people, start engaging with their content, right? Start engaging with them, start posting, like you're saying, an article or whatever, because then people are like, oh, wow, look at this one. Okay, that's very interesting. And then by the time, you know, because I think the challenge very often is people get on LinkedIn and they're already jumping in the DM and they're already saying, give me a job, you know? I think it's a wooing process. So start building that up so that by the time you then okokota and say, hey, I'd like to have this conversation, they've kind of already engaged with you, but you need to start operating in spaces like LinkedIn. Yeah. I think it's very important as a young person that you start operating, because there's information there. Engage with the content, engage with the people that are there. Go in and comment, go in and ask questions.
There's that is so important. Actually, reminds me of one of my favorite scenes from, I don't know if you've watched Crazy Rich Asians.
Mm-hmm.
But in one of the scenes, they're at a wedding and there's this like powerful woman that nobody is sitting next to, right, at the church. So everyone is sitting on the road behind her.
The road. Over the top wedding, hey.
Yes, yes. So everyone is sitting
and all of that stuff, yes.
Basically, yes. And then the person who they were, because she's a peasant, went up to this powerful woman and said, oh, hey, so-and-so, I actually read your article that was published in the whatever journal. And this lady's like, who are you? Take a seat. Let's talk. And it's that simple. Say, Tokozile, you know, I just, found very interesting insights on your page. You shared a link about what. Can I please just get a little bit more understanding of whatever that's being spoken about in that article or whatever that is being spoken about in that podcast or whatever. It's just basically your way in. And when we talk about networking, it's not this crazy big occasion or crazy big event that happens. Networking is simply saying, we have the same interests, but please, because you are seasoned, I'd just like to find out a little bit more. Then you are in.
When you know, especially when we're speaking and you know, good point on networking, because it all ties in with like, you know, this brand, but have a plan. Cause I think a lot of times, you know, people are doing it in a very haphazard way. And I think in as much as, you know, you plan when you're going to write an exam, you plan when you're going to go to this, what's this festival that's coming up in December that everyone's going crazy for? There's so much planning. No king, the one way, Boher and Kimangman.
That one,
hers coming. I feel like, I mean, I've seen like my nephew, I mean, he's like 22 now. So much planning like has gone into, I'm going to be there. But I'm like, planning for your future, my love? Like, what's your plan to meet people in your space? What's your plan to, because, and I think because when we think of planning, we always think, oh, it's this complex chimeric or what. No, you're planning in your life. So plan everything, because if you don't plan for your life, life will happen to you. And also if you are going to be an employee or whatever, and if you don't plan and you don't have a strategy for yourself, you will simply just be a cog in somebody's machine, right? Mm-hmm. Because you are just, they're going to use you, because Oksala, you're fine. Come do what I need you to do. But if you don't clear on what your plan is, then you'll just go along. But where, if you're clear, like, I mean, for example, how I got to get the opportunity to go work in London, I was strategic when I left Worksmans because I wanted global experience. And I chose a global firm, and I chose it on the basis that I will get exposure. Because I remember when I was interviewing, it was just at the time when Denise was closing off the deal with Norton Rose. And in my interview, they were telling me, yeah, global opportunities. God, okay, that's right. I got in the firm. When the time came, I then went back to my boss and I was like, you know, part of my plan was to get this experience. If I didn't remember and have a plan, I would have worked in a global organization and never took up that opportunity, because I wouldn't have had a plan. And I wouldn't have remembered that I need to go and, you know, get that experience as well. And just also just close off, but especially like, you know, they say a season of waiting. Very often people can think a season of waiting is a season of punishment or Mudimo undebate, you know, God has forgotten about me. But what we must really remember is that your season of waiting is your season of preparation. If you fail to then prepare in that season of preparation, in that season of waiting, when opportunity comes, you will be found wanting.
That just literally gave me goosebumps. Oh, I'm like, yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little bit dragged, so I'm gonna get my acts together. Just at the beginning of this week, I'm like, no, man, I'm on midterm break. It's just been a hectic 6 months. And I was literally on midterm break because I'm just like, ay, man, we had a plan at the beginning of the year. What's going on? I'm just in this slump. So Thank you. That's the wake up call I needed. That's the wake up call.
And remember, you know, there's ebb and flow in life. So there are seasons where, you know, of suddenly, yo, mang, hey, this opportunity, hey, Nedbank, yes, girl, you know, coming.
Yeah, but we were preparing in our seasons of wait.
You know, and I mean, I think of you, like, you know, COVID had an impact, but you continued with that plan and look what happened post-COVID. Your plans are coming to fruition because you didn't give up on that plan. And in fact, you've gone on to extend the reach. You've got additional sponsors. You're in the region because in that COVID, because it becomes very evident when you see people, what people are getting up to post-COVID, who was working and who wasn't. And sometimes you are working on something, no one can see it, no one can understand it. And it's so easy to feel like, yo, because you're looking next door, because your friend is there, your friend just posted this, they've just gone here, they've just gone there. But it's fine. We're not in your time. You know, sometimes the season isn't to be running. Sometimes the season is to sit still, is to be still, is to reflect, is to then identify where are my weaknesses, right? Because if you don't take the time to understand your weaknesses, they will be used against you. But if you're in the season where there's nothing else happening, then this is the season when Mudumo is saying, come work on yourself. What's happening in you? A lot of the stuff is not external. Yes, the job will come, but spend that time cultivating your strengths, identifying your weaknesses, and being able to overcome some of these things. If you feel like I don't have experience, I'm interested in tech or whatever, and I don't have experience, okay, there's no job coming, all right, but you're on your phone, like you're saying, scrolling the Instagram, scroll through a tech magazine, read.
And these resources are already at our fingertips.
Lee, YouTube is the greatest teacher on the planet right now. People are sleeping on YouTube. You can learn and unpack anything. When I got into fund management, I'm an infrastructure development specialist, not a private equity specialist. So when I was approached, you know, in 2020. To come and partner and join this fund. I remember even, you know, when we think about that imposter syndrome that just somehow never leaves, I'm sitting in a, you know, I'm being offered, hey, come join, come be a partner. I want you to come help me run this thing. And I remember saying, you know, I'm not a funds lawyer. In fact, we see Honales Mang who actually does this.
Hey.
And in hindsight, I'm like, wait a minute. Like I was giving my to somebody else, you know?
Yeah. Why can't it be you?
Why can't it be me? And I then, you know, to try and understand some of that stuff, I went back to, you know, I read, I've been studying, I did YouTube, you know, 101, what is discretionary fund management? Let me try and understand it. I then prepared, you know, okay, let me write my regulatory exams. I've written them, 3 regulatory exams done. So growing into it, you know, it's that thing that, Branson? He says, if somebody gives you an opportunity and you don't know how to do it, say yes and you'll learn, but commit to that learning. Commit to your growth. I'm passionate about facilitating. So I went and I got accredited as a facilitator in my waiting season with no training in sight other than, you know, my standing work with the African Association of African Development Finance Institutions. But knowing that when the opportunity comes, I don't want to, when they say, okay, fine, you say you can train. Where's your certificate? Where's your certification? But I had an entire season where I was sitting, waiting for the opportunity, but not getting ready.
Sure. Yeah, no, I am moved. Yeah, I am moved.
So much
for that. Sure, Togozile, unfortunately, our conversation has come to an end. Just looking at the time, you literally have a few minutes, maybe 3 or so minutes to just share any parting words with us. If there's something that, you know, you have on your chest or something that was at the back of your mind when I first asked you to please be a guest, now is the time to just share those few words with us on anything that I probably didn't, you know, ask on, something we didn't touch on that you think you can just squeeze into these last few minutes.
Sure. I think I would really say, and it's probably just emphasizing a lot of what I've said, but it starts with you, right? It really starts with you. You know, the world, you know, the world will meet you at the point of where you're at. So how do you want the world to meet you? You know, and the world will view you and accept you from how you are perceiving yourself. If you see yourself as a victim, if you see yourself as I'll never be able to, if you see yourself as inadequate, that is how the world will respond to you. But if you are going to, you know, take the time to work on yourself, cultivate yourself, work on your mental health, work on your emotional health, you know, work on dealing with the negative self-talk. You know, I feel like most of the battle is won. Most of the battles are won in the mind. And when you've dealt with self, you know, you the world becomes your oyster, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. So in closing, you know, there's that, you know, those t-shirts that Woolies had, go within or stay without. And for me, that's really, I've always come back to it. So when I'm feeling in a season where I feel like I'm under attack, or I'm not winning, or something's not okay, I often feel like it's a reflection of what's happening inside me. What do I need to go and kind of fix and deal with inside me? And I think to a large extent, you know, that going within and starting with you, it's about understanding what your grounding practice is. Understand what gives you power. Understand what keeps you centered. Because once you've understood what is it that you need to come back to feel 100%, you are able to know how to self-soothe, how to self-feed, how to self-develop, to get back out there to fight another day. You know, maybe it's reading, maybe it's running, maybe it's listening to music, whatever it is, but understand how do I find my source of power? Because you are born with every single thing you need to achieve every single big audacious goal that you may have in your mind. How short it in any way, you just need to know how to go dig it out and dig it out when life gets tough.
Yo, hi, thank you. Thank you, Tokozile, for those parting words, but also just thank you for your invaluable insights, for availing yourself to speak to us today. I'm sure a lot of people have learned from you, and I hope a lot of people have enjoyed hearing from you as much as I've enjoyed speaking to you. So thank you so much for your time and for sharing your journey so beautifully with us.
Oh, it's an absolute, absolute pleasure. And well done and congratulations to you. Hey, I think you're doing such phenomenal work. I think you're probably the best example of, you know, just get started. You know, some people would look at the platform and will be like, yo, and thinking, I need to wait for the sponsor. I need to wait for the buy-in. But the problem is, if you don't develop a product that can be bought into, you're never going to move, right? So I think, you know, congratulations to you for what you've built. And like, I think, you know, it's just going to go bigger and bigger. And I think especially the focus on young people, the focus on the next generation is so, so important and so crucial. You're doing really important work. And I wish you all of the best in your journey.
Thank you. That is, those are such beautiful words. Like I keep saying, I needed to hear that. So thank you so much for just actually serving as a reminder. Sometimes we pray to God for signs, and these are the signs that we are looking for. It's not going to be something obvious. It's going to be, I've been meaning
just
to
take invite a moment for it.
Now learning to have on the show. So yeah, thank you.
No, well done. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I do have to let you know, let you go now, Thokozile, but we will be in touch on WhatsApp. So thank you so much.
Perfect. Chat soon. Have a good day further.
You too. Bye.